Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where we have Doc Holliday back. And Doc, it's been a little while since we spoke, but it's great to be having you on again on this bank holiday banger, as Kenny called it before we came on air. So how are you doing?
I'm good. It's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me back on.
Absolutely.
It's been a little while and lots has happened since we last spoke, so good to get back and talk about that.
Yeah. Hi, Doc. No, it seems, I think it's about 6 or 7 weeks since we last done a podcast. I mean, it was probably in the depths of winter, although I believe, Mark, you're still in the depths of winter, bizarrely enough, in Holland. Yeah, it's nice and sunny in Scotland.
It was a bit of a, it's not anymore, but this morning it was a bit of a snowy blizzard. Yeah, and rather windy, but it has stopped snowing, but it's still chilly.
Yeah, that's
madness, isn't it? That is absolute madness.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, that's kind of weather you expect in Scotland, you know. I mean, I've went to like Knockhill races before in May, which is up in the hills, and you know, when I've got a photograph of me sitting in shorts and t-shirt, and then 10 minutes later, it's like a blizzard. But you expect that in Scotland, but not in Holland. It's a bit strange, but anyway, good stuff, good stuff. So, what are you up to, Doc? It's the quietest you've ever been. I mean, it must be hard for you to keep your mouth shut this long.
Yeah, well, look, when you're a self-admitted gobshite, it can be a challenge. But it's something that I've been working on for a little while, and slowly, trying to phase out sort of my public activity. And I think moving forward, there's lots of really interesting and exciting projects to get involved with. And unfortunately, the Doc Holliday presence doesn't really benefit me anywhere near as much as it seems to benefit others. And that sounds a little bit like I'm blowing smoke into my own ass, but it's not really. I mean, it's just a situation of I've been around, I've engaged in lots of debate and argument and variety of different things, and almost seem to be championing the little guy. But yeah, I guess moving forward, that role is not something that I wish to continue on with. And I think, you know, from a professional standpoint, with some of the opportunities that are out there, it's better for me to sort of slowly regress and, you know, retire that whole Doc Holliday presence. And that's my intention.
It's a bit like David Bowie. He changed his persona every 2 or 3 years, didn't he? Depending on what the music scene was doing, he reinvented himself. So I'm not saying you're reinventing yourself, but your Twitter account was interesting as well, because obviously you've changed your name, and from what I can gather, that loosely translated means new life. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, look, to be honest, what happens with that account moving forward, I really don't know. I would like to reset it and start again, and, you know, maybe it can go to some good use in the future. But, yeah, it is what it is. I think it's just about moving on. It's certainly not reinventing myself. I've spent a long time, over 10 years in the junior market, waking up every day, reading every announcement, and, you know, sort of trading every day. And it's taxing. And yeah, I guess I've got to that point in life where I want to try to have more opportunity to enjoy life. And you can't do that if you're sitting reading every single announcement and reading every single tweet and watching every interview and sitting on investor calls. It takes up a lot of bandwidth. And what I've come to find is the things that I've been most successful with are the things that I've been able to get involved with on a more sort of personal basis, more intimate basis. And I've had some great returns from that. So it's something I want to focus on. I want to focus on enjoying life a bit more. And, you know, time is something that we can never get back. So, yeah, I mean, you know, all the power to people that are sitting there trading every day, trying to sort of get to financial freedom or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I kind of got there in 2017, took a short break and came back to the market with a small pot again, you know, kind of give myself a massive insurance policy, came back to the market with a small pot. And in 2 or 3 years, managed to make more the second time around than the first time from a really low base again. And what's the point just repeating it over and over. You know, I can't sort of, I live a modest life. I'm not going to go out there and start, you know, spunking all of the cash on in fancy Ferraris or anything like that. So, yeah, just about sort of trying to keep hand in with some interesting opportunities. And retirement, that's what it's all about.
So
really.
It is, it's actually retirement. It's not just retirement of the Doc Holliday persona. It's actually retirement from the market.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's, like I say, there's some interesting projects that I'll be involved in moving forward. I've had a number of different opportunities. A couple of companies have approached me to see if I want to go and do some work with them. You know, director type roles. And there was an opportunity to be involved with an investment company, which I've not actually said no to. But it's probably a no, because it would require me to be actively involved, even if not publicly, privately, on the same basis. So it's not a trade I want to make that. I think I'm going to stick to my guns. So yeah, so far it will be working in the background on some projects, enjoying life, maybe pop up every now and again and talk about, you know, some of the things that are going on. And that's about it. Yeah. But look, there's lots of... it's been a tough 6 or 7 weeks since we last spoke. You know, we've had a situation where markets have been choppy and traded sort of sideways, and gold prices. So.
Volumes just dropped off. Crazy, hasn't it, in the last 6 or 7 weeks? I mean, there's some stocks you're lucky if you've seen 10 trades a day, and, you know, 2 months ago you were getting maybe 500-600 trades in it. So it's... Yeah, it's been good in a way, because obviously myself and Mark are involved with the stock box as well, and have been really busy in that. So we've not really had the distractions of the market. So we've just been focusing mainly in stock box at the moment, which is just taking up stupid amounts of time, which is good. That's why you start a business. Now, you don't start a business just to be twiddling your fingers. You know, we're trying to scale up, because obviously we're a year old. We started when COVID was announced. We're just over a year old now, so we're now looking to take it to the next level. We're actually looking at some office space as well, because this working from your bedroom, it's not healthy for me. I don't know about you, Mark, but I was struggling for 2 or 3 weeks here to actually get dressed during the day, which is not an ideal scenario to be in. I mean, I wasn't naked, if you know what I mean, but
having routine is hugely important, and whether that routine starts to sort of change for the better but for the worse, I think you've got to do something about it. And if, you know, getting an office space helps you sort of build your routine up and give you an identity that helps you take the business to the next level, then again, more power to you. There's plenty of people that, you know, go and buy a bigger house or rent a bigger property with an extra office space, and they commit themselves to working from that office and don't get distracted by, you know, the television or other things going on around them. But whatever it is you need to build your brand and your identity, you've got to go with it. It sounds like that's what you're doing. And good luck to you. So, congratulations. No,
It should be interesting. So it should. It'll bring its own challenges, obviously, with you know, running an office and everything you need to ensure is in place. But that's all part of the journey and the learning curve. So we're looking forward to it. And I might even let Mark visit occasionally if he's allowed out from Holland. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice when we can travel again. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can come up to Scotland, and we'll. It'd be good. But what the markets.
What about your podcast, though, Doc? Are you going to continue that? I noticed you didn't do one for a while, but then I think you did one. I think it was last weekend. Maybe it went out, which I quite enjoyed. It was quite fun.
Yeah, I mean that's much of a muchness, sort of, kind of like the last hurrah, I think.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, there's a possibility that it carries on. It's a possibility that I've got some interesting interviews, Mark, actually lined up that I'd like to sort of see through.
But, some interviews, yeah, okay, cool.
You know, there's some really interesting characters that I've got teed up that, you know, a bit like Nick Leeson, those sort of big names that I'd really like to sort of get on and talk to them about markets. I think there's some value in that for people, and, you know, understanding perhaps the events of and experiences of other people that perhaps are in the the broking game, or the, you know, the fund management business, or whatever it might be. Yeah, I think that in itself offers value and interest for the listener. But I mean, I don't quite know how that works. Probably just publish them on a platform, or maybe share it with a couple of different platforms and let them run with it. But you know, me ranting on effing and jeffing and all the rest of it. No, I mean, look, I've deleted all of the history apart from the last one I did. The last one will get deleted. Okay. That will get shut down. I mean, it's no point sort of saying you're going to do something and not doing it. Actions speak louder than words. So yeah, I mean, that sort of period in my life is coming to an end. I've enjoyed it. I've just not enjoyed it a lot over the last year. I mean, I've made plenty of cash. It's been hugely lucrative on a personal basis. But I just don't get the same sort of sense of enjoyment out of it. People think I absolutely love ranting about markets, and I couldn't be further from the truth. Couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
I'll maybe pass it on to you, Mark, if you want, and you can start ranting.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm a ranter. Maybe I could have a go. But well, anyway, whatever you do, I hope you don't disappear completely, because it's always fun to talk to you. But if you do some interviews, for sure, why not? Stockbox, I'm sure we'll be happy to put them out, or we'll certainly listen to them anyway, whatever platform you decide to do. But I think there's definitely a space for that. Someone with your time and experience in the markets to talk to people, like you just mentioned there, about different things that go into the markets and how they work, I think would be very interesting for people. So whatever you do, take some time, but don't disappear, is what I'm saying.
But the bumming question is, Doc, have you still got your silver?
Of course, mean, it's...
I'll buy that off you in a couple of months at a discount. I'm just biding my time, so you'll get fed up with it, and I'll just seal in and take it off you.
Kenny the Magpie, what's the price? I mean, I haven't even looked at the price, to be honest.
$25 or something. I've not really been
24.7, it looks like.
24.7, yeah. So it's not a million miles away, probably, from where we started, to be honest. I've still got all mine. So I must admit, lad, I bought the crypto stamps, but I don't know, Doc, if you have got any crypto exposure. I've actually moved in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I've probably moved a bit, maybe 10% of my portfolio into the crypto world. So I have a bit of a steep learning curve. So there is. But
how successful?
Reasonable so far, but then we are in a decent market. So I mean, I'm wary that it can come all crashing down, but it's not as simple as buying stocks and shares. I mean, there's a huge, huge learning curve. So there is, but I quite enjoy stuff like that. I enjoy, you know, getting involved in staking programs and liquidity pools. And to be honest, I mean, the best source of information has actually been Telegram. There's actually quite a few sort of help groups on there, and there's some really knowledgeable people.
But have you gone off the silver, Kenny? Because your target was what, 10,000 ounces? Have you gone off it?
I wish it was 10,000. I've got 750. I'll probably take it up to 1,000 at some point. Like I say, I'm just waiting for Doc to sell me his Jeep, and that'll get me up to the 1,000.
And you're getting into the NFT space as well, aren't you? Quite big now.
Yeah. So I think I might have shared them with you.
Yeah, you showed me a few.
Yeah, this augmented reality, which was NFTs that I'd bought as well from an app. So yeah, I'm a magpie, my bloody magpie. I just work my finger in absolute everything. But I definitely think if you take your time in the crypto space, I mean, it trades 24/7, 365 days a year. There's some opportunities in there for money to be made, but it's an absolute minefield. So it is. An absolute minefield. So I'm just going very slowly and leaning.
I think the thing to be mindful of in that space for anybody who's kind of looking at it is, you know, the peaks and troughs that we're seeing historically are going to be repeated. That's just an obvious thing. So yes, there is great opportunity. I know that there's a couple of guys that I'd kind of had some a relationship with historically that really went into that space and made it their own, and they've done exceptionally well from being in that area.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, those sort of those moves will dwarf sort of junior market moves. I mean, they're going to be colossal. And that is, does, you know, Bitcoin go $60,000, $50,000 to $100,000, $150,000 a coin? Or does it go and follow the move when it went from, you know, 1,000 to 15,000 back to three? And if that's the case, then arguably, you know, Bitcoin's going to see 15, 20,000 or 25,000 again. And that's a massive drop from where it's been trading at. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is you've got to be mindful of those moves. And if you're sort of throwing caution to the wind, yeah, get stuck in.
Yeah.
If not, then perhaps you sort of look and say, well, I'm going to get educated, learn as much as I can right now. There'll be a blow off top and a pull back within that sort of area. At some point, and then I'm gonna pounce, you know, with all of the knowledge that I need to be profitable. That would be my advice to anybody, whether it's this market or another, to be honest.
Yeah, the thing that appeals to me about some of the tokens is that you can actually stake these and earn more tokens for, you know, for taking part in the staking or liquidity program. So some of them are extremely generous. So it's a bit like buying a million shares in, let's say, Nostra Terra, for example. You know, and if you committed to locking them in for a month, you would get another 50,000 shares at the end of the month. You know, you would do it, wouldn't you? You know,
absolutely. And like I say, you know, a couple of guys that I used to sort of communicate with a lot in the oil space, they started to pursue this business. There's lots of people who just jumped on for the buzz and the hype and everything else, but these guys actually went away and started to apply the same sort of due diligence that they would have applied looking at oil companies. And they made some great calls on things like diversified oil and gas and a few other things really early on. But they were just like uber boffins and hugely committed to due diligence. And look, you know, their knowledge of staking the businesses and how you can build up recurring revenue or passive income or whatever you want to call it has been immense. And these guys are still actually holding full-time jobs, just about, but they're making a, you know, stack of cash from doing exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's education though. Getting familiar with how it works is par for the course. So we see lots of people rush into markets, whether it be cryptocurrencies or whether it be, you know, sort of equity markets or whichever it may be. And they go and put money into things. And then it's like the baptism of fire. They learn on the job. And I think there's an element you need to do that. So if you've got 20 grand in an inheritance and you want to get stuck into the market, I would say to somebody, put £1,000 into something you've done some research on and see how it goes. And then if the, you know, the slap round the face is a brutal one, it's going to hit you for 5% of your overall sort of capital. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go and chuck the full load in, you know, that lesson can take you years to recover. The money, and these are the problems that I had when I came into the market. I'd, you know, got caught up with the glitz and glam of junior markets, and I went and sort of sold down my shares in BP and all of these other things and loaded into this business, you know, of junior markets. And that lesson was outrageous. And it took me probably 2 years to get back to break even. The third year I was profitable, I was making good money. The fourth year was hugely profitable, and it went on, and it was great then. But let me tell you that sort of getting up every day and slogging it out, trying to get your 8 grand or, you know, 5 grand position back to 20. It is so difficult. It is such a challenge. It's frightening. So I would say to anybody that's coming into crypto, equity markets, FX, whatever it is, if you've got a bit of cash, if dad's helped you out or mum or aunt's, you know, sadly passed away or whatever, and you've come into a few quid and you want to have a go in the markets, those demo accounts are very difficult because you'll take risks that are not real, and you need to feel your way around markets to appreciate it. But I would still say put a little bit into something you're confident with and see how you perform. And if you've got it wrong or something's gone horrific, you can try and rectify that and then go again. But sadly, too many people, they come in and they read these buzzed up stories about, you know, and it's a classic one. You know, Mateus has launched his YouTube channel and he does a great job. You know, he's obviously been hugely successful with Argo blockchain. But people are now looking at him saying, well, he bought at 5-10p and he sold some at £2, £3 or whatever it might be. And he's clearly made a shitload of cash and he's packed in his day job. We should follow Mateus and go and buy Argo blockchain. No, it's actually the wrong thing to do. What you need to do is understand the logic and the rationale that, you know, characters that have been successful have applied, and then go and look for your own opportunity. And if not that, actually take, you know, think about this and say, well, you know, some of these guys have been lucky punters. I'm not saying that for one moment with Mateus, because he seems extremely switched on, and he seems in tune with you know, that investment and others around it. But, you know, there are people out there that have made big names for themselves. They've got fancy cars, fancy homes, fancy holidays. And it's all on what, the back of one trade or one trend. You know, it's people who've been around the market consistently for a long time and successful that actually are the kind of people to be following. And you know, that would be some advice that I would share with people too. I'll get off my soapbox and I'll hand it back to you now.
No, it's fine. I'm just wondering how far down the line we don't have shares anymore, and mining companies will be running in tokens. I mean, it's almost like a match made in heaven, isn't it? I think that's coming as well. It would certainly.
Kenny, the problem that you've got to be careful of, and this is as you move into that sort of space, and you start to, you know, sort of chant the mantra, if you will. What you've got to be really careful of is as people start to chant the mantra of, you know, we're going to move away from centralized control, we're going to move away from, you know, the archaic system that we live within. What we actually have to remember is, do we really think that the rich elite 1% on this planet are going to let the little guy revolutionize the future? It's absolute horseshit. So for me, I would keep reminding people, without central controls and central banking systems and all of the things that have built, you know, the world that we live in today, what happens without that? So you no longer have armies to defend nations. You know, so what do we come? Do we become boundaryless? Do we become borderless? Do we start to regress and sort of colonize into smaller communities and build sort of, you know, a civilization with big walls around us? How does the world look? And this is one of the things that I spoke to John McAfee about extensively. We've got to be careful about the way that people talk and apply that mantra of, you know, we're going to revolutionize the future. We are, but if we're going to revolutionize it, it'll be revolutionized with the most wealthiest, 100 wealthiest people on this planet. And therefore, they're going to be setting the trend a whole bunch better than the little guy. So we have to remember that. They're not going to be a passenger on the ship. They're going to be the pilot or the skipper. Anyway.
Yeah. But I'm coming at it from a point more that to get investors interested in you know, the space that we are in, they are not used to buying stocks and shares. The younger generation, it's all crypto, tokens, coins, Bitcoin. So you're going to have to adopt that model to make, you know, buying stocks and shares attractive for the next generation to be the next, you know, what age are we? I'm 50 next year, and Mark, you're 37, Doc, you're 40-something. You know, we might still have another 20 years of investing, but where's the next level of investors coming? So the market's going to have to adopt to a model that attracts the younger generation, and they want to be able to do it on their phone, they want to be able to do it quickly, they want to be able to do it cheaply, and they want to see everything in the one page. So I just think that the markets are going to have to move with the times.
You're right. I think one of the things that I looked at, and you might have not looked at this, but there was a survey conducted by the FCA that said something like 40% of young people that are investing in the markets today, and this is equity markets, have 48%, I think it was, of young investors had not considered what risk looked like. They'd not considered that they could lose all of their money. Most people had an awareness that they could lose a portion of their investment, so that was the risk they thought they were taking. But in actual fact, they had not considered total loss. And that's a huge proportion of investors coming into this, into the markets today, who clearly don't understand where they're putting their money and the associated risks with that. I mean, it's mind-blowing. Yeah, so I think education is going to be huge. And if that is born out of an unregulated society or a decentralized sort of society of trading in tokens, then yeah, I think the two do go hand in hand, but I think you're massively open. So if we think we're seeing corruption in equity markets today, then Christ almighty, what does it look like in the future?
Well, I think one of the lessons that the market could and perhaps brokers learn from the crypto world is, so when you open a bespoke brokerage account, you know, sometimes the paperwork is an absolute ball breaker. You know, it may be four or five different forms to fill in. They want every scan under the sun, and it can take like a week to get an account open. Whereas a typical crypto exchange, you sign up, you do everything with your phone, it takes a photograph of you, it records your voice, you upload your documentation, and your KYC is done like in 10 minutes, and that's you're ready to go. And you just think, see, if a broker could actually adopt that model, how easy would it be to get people to sign up? They would do it because it's hassle. I can guarantee you, if you went to a 20-year-old or 22-year-old out of uni and said, right, let's sign up for XYZ broker, and you showed them the application forms, they would just say, nah, forget it, I'm not doing it. So there's definite things that the brokers have got to come out of the prehistoric ages, I think, and get...
No, it's draconian, Ken. It's draconian. I agree with you, and I think the whole model is becoming tired. And, you know, I do think that there's a great opportunity for something to sort of replace the status quo. You know, I think we definitely agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've not got an eToro account, so I don't really know how, if that operates in that way. I know that's where a lot of people, especially in North America, a lot of them using the eToro, but I don't know if it's got, I'm assuming that's got a similar interface for KYC, but no, there's definitely lessons to be learned. But all right, I've probably dwelled too long on that. What about the market? Are you looking at much, Doc, or are we just...
One of the misconceptions we've got is from people is, you've kind of gone quiet. So is that, have you sold all your positions? And the answer to that simply is no, I've not. I've got my size in a position that I'm comfortable with. I've got a great amount of interest in Contango Holdings for reasons as previously stated. But I think one of the issues that we're seeing at the moment is people just don't understand that, you know, this company had a coking asset, the Lubu project. And I think that's when you sort of first interviewed them, Mark. That's interesting because they've just done they're now talking about a discussion for an offtake partnership. And if you go and look at the history over the last 2 years, the biggest manufacturing company of steel, which incidentally is Chinese, has been talking about growing its operations in Zimbabwe for a long time. If you put the dots together, if you start to join the dots together, the conversation that Contango are having now is basically with them indirectly through their subsidiary vehicle in Zimbabwe. So you've now got this tiny little company that's now talking about doing an offtake deal. And I actually think some of the words that are being, you know, bumped around the city, that there's a potential that they want to buy the whole project from them, because clearly Contango went into its gold project looking at about 320,000 ounces targeted. Their recent NI 43-101 report is now sort of earmarking 2 million ounces. So the gold project is five times bigger than initially thought. The coal project is probably still interesting. But, you know, if these guys do a deal where the Chinese come in and offtake for the coal or finance that project, and then this gold thing is as big as it looks on the surface. I mean, it's revolutionary. What happens is the market goes and trades the stock at 10p, 10.5p for an hour, and then there's a sell-off. I mean, it's just consistent with junior markets at the moment where we're seeing these sell-offs. But, you know, there's a golden opportunity with Contango. So for me, I remain long. Same with, Capital Metals.
Yeah,
the company come out and they've basically said in recent interviews that the EIA would, after the open consultation, the company clearly stated after the public consultation that they would get approval for that project. So the approval was given subject to the open consultation. The open consultation has not thrown up any issue whatsoever, to my knowledge. So then, you know, we can expect that project goes ahead. If it goes ahead, it's absolutely enormous. It's super high grade. And the fucking shares are trading at 15, 16p. I mean, it's ludicrous. But this is a result of the market we've been in for the last 6 weeks. But there's the opportunities. For me, it's not an opportunity to sell. It's an opportunity to hold or even add into those. And there's a whole bunch of other things as well. So I don't want to dominate the chat about companies. But people are asking me, you know, is that you done in the market? Have you sold? And the simple answer to that is absolutely not. I'm looking at these in a lot more depth, and I'm focusing on my own portfolio. Yes, the size is manageable because there's always a risk that I believe the market is hinging a lot of its hope, or the hanging the hat on, coming back after the bank holiday weekend, new ISAs allocation, new tax year, and that all this money is going to come flooding in. If it doesn't, then, you know, does the market get spooked again, and do we see another month or so of crappy trading? So I think there's, for me, I think that's a real risk, and people are not kind of considering it. They're just hoping that it's going to suddenly bounce back. So at the same time, I'd say manage your position sizes, etc. But now there's some great opportunities. I mean, I don't know about yourselves, but there's two to kick us off.
I mean, obviously Stockbox is pretty much dominating everything I'm doing at the moment. So I mean, I've been pretty much, I've not really done much. I mean, I did a good run in Coincilium, and I took some profit off the table. It was a nice move. It caught the NFT wave. And I think obviously it's got a dual listing in the OTC, and that's certainly helped it. And I see that, that's just talking about the OTC now, I see there's a few companies starting to take listings in the OTC. I know that Thor done it recently as well. They clearly see there's a lot of opportunity to have a bit of a exposure in the American markets. But I've done very little, to be honest.
Kenny, it's 200 grand, mate. You know, I was speaking to a guy out of Marbella whose sole job is listing companies on OTC. And, you know, it's a couple of hundred thousand quid. There's a big buzz out there. Some of the valuations have gone absolutely crazy. And if you're in that sort of tech, crypto, you know, renewables, that sort of in vogue environment, people are really benefiting.
Yeah.
It's whether there's longevity to it remains to be seen, but yeah, it's really picking up pace, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and there's quite a few forums as well. So I mean, I've been kind of getting my head around some of the OTC stocks and how it works. And there's as you say, there's definitely a lot of money in the OTC, and there's just it's like the TSX. They seem to have like crazy amounts of companies on there. The OTC is the same. It's just ridiculous. So many companies and so many opportunities. But then I've not really looked at how easy it is to invest in OTC from the sort of UK side. I mean, I don't know. I think maybe Interactive Investor, perhaps. I'm not sure. It's something I maybe need to spend a few hours on.
No, it's an absolute nightmare, because I think what happens is if you don't declare tax in the US or you're not a resident, you've got to go and file all sorts of different applications, and it's a total ball ache. And that's something that we're hearing people complaining about, you know, a lot historically, because again, these things are cyclical. So OTC has not suddenly just become popular. OTC has been around for a long time, and you know, those types of exchanges are sort of become famous because of the movies like Wolf of Wall Street and things like that, the pink sheets. But yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, trading on those exchanges is extremely difficult at times. And that's probably what puts off lots of punters here in the UK. But look, there's a huge amount of appetite over in the US for these things. So again, new markets. It's
It brings us back to that conversation we had earlier on. The whole system in the UK needs to get its arse into gear and get into the 21st century, because it's still stuck in the last century, as far as I'm concerned. Even, I mean, I know we're doing a bit of a rant, but even you look at the RNSs that come out from the LSE, you know, they're absolutely bland and atrocious. And then you go and look at the ASX model, and you see some of the stuff they bring out with all the diagrams and everything, and it's, you actually want to read it because you're interested. Whereas some of the shit that comes out from LSE, it's just like...
Sorry, Mark, and to interject. I mean, I'll shut up in a moment. But one of the things that I totally agree with you on is, you know, you've got this thing out in Australia where they suspend trading before, you know, a material announcement. And I think that's something that has been called for many times in the UK. And it's got to happen, because we're seeing the same thing over and over again. And that is, you know, the retail get lined up with a load of spurious announcements or bullshit that gets circulated in the public domain. And then, bosh, you know, those big equity issues come out and they take the knees out of the secondary market. And these little companies need secondary market support. It needs a strong secondary market. And we've enjoyed and experienced a great secondary market for the last year or so. So we need to preserve it. And the only way we can preserve it is by making those changes. So I agree with you completely.
Yeah. I think things perhaps, do you think they are changing? I see this, I think it's just maybe it's an excuse to look good after Brexit, but there's some things in the news going on about having to changing the sort of the way the city is regulated. And there's been in the news a lot about these SPACs, these like, the special purpose acquisition companies, that what it stands for. So what is all that about? I mean, there's a few of these SPACs going around. I just see this word going around and it's, I don't know, I'm not really sure what it means. Is it just making it easier to, to get
well,
these...
Well, look, Mark, the argument was when the last budget happened that Rishi Sunak would change the way that markets would, and they were seeking to change the way that markets would operate with these SPACs. I mean, we know them as shell vehicles,
shells,
don't we?
Yeah.
The problem when you're a shell company is that you have a fixed period of time to complete a transaction if you're AIM listed. You have more flexibility on the standard list. And once you make an announcement, i.e. indicate what the business plans to do, so you're planning to do an acquisition or you're signing some sort of heads or an agreement with a company, under the current rule, you have to suspend pending the transaction completing. Whereas in the US, you can put together a vehicle with a management team and you can sort of come to markets and say, this is who we are, this is what we intend to do. And if you've got a proven track record or you've got plenty of cash, yeah, I mean, it's great. It carries on trading. So these guys can continually keep raising money into a sort of a fluid and sort of supportive, buzzy market. And it works for them. Whereas here, what you have to do is you come out and you say, we've got this management team and we're looking at crypto or we're looking at CBD. Immediately you suspend and you've got to then go and raise your money when the shares aren't trading. It's really difficult because if you're in an illiquid market or a down market, it's hard to find the appetite and the interest of people. Whereas if you can continue trading and you're liquid and your shares are moving, it makes it a whole bunch easier because people say, well, actually, I didn't really like the idea of it initially, but looking how it trades and looking what other people think, I think I've got it wrong. I want to get involved. Do you get what I'm saying? And that's where the SPAC craze has really taken off over in the US.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because you look out for these shells, don't you, Kenny? That's one thing that you sort of keep
Yeah, they come in and out of flavour. I mean, I think I was in a few along with Doc, and they can go really well, and sometimes they can go a bit peak tong as well. So it's just about getting in and out at the right, do you want to be there for the share suspended potentially for 4 or 5 months or whatever? Effectively, you could be tying up, say 10 grand for 4 and 5 months that you can't get access to because it's it's suspended. But
I mean, I've done my first one. No idea which way it's going to go, but it's Sabian. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, SNT. So SNT. Look, I mean, the thing with Sabian is, the chairman after the raise went and put in, 450,000 at 0.1075p at the time. And that was a massive endorsement. I mean, they could have made another announcement because it was quickly after the market really started to move. And of course, he did kind of feather his own cap a little bit when he said he was going to take these warrants as part of the purchase of the shares. But I still thought it was quite an admirable thing to do because he'd basically said that, he didn't want to just announce another placing. He wanted to buy them in the market and show his support for the business. And they raised money at 005. He paid about 115% or 110% premium to where the shares were a couple of weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. And yeah, great for him. I think it's fabulous. If a director's prepared to part with that amount of cash, 450,000 out of his back pocket, you've got to sort of suggest that these guys have got a plan.
Yeah,
he's confident in himself, isn't he? So I think it's a great shout, Matt.
Yeah, well, that's what I noticed that and thought, that is a huge endorsement there. And he's been very busy as well. I mean, there's lots of news coming out. I've been trying to get him to come on an interview, and he's sort of, I think he wants to get a few things, ducks in a row before he does that. But he's certainly not seem to be hanging around. So I thought I'd give it a go, see what happens.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, Kenny. I know we had that interest in Nostra Terra, but they've been getting a bit of interest around what's coming next there. I saw a couple of people on social media as I was sort of slowing down. We're now looking at they were looking at some of the private listings at Companies House, and I found this little vehicle that was associated to Nostra. Then you sort of go and look at Steve Staley and his background. He's had a huge amount of success in his previous life with Cove Energy and businesses of the such. And we know with Upland Resources, he was very, very, very focused on trying to do deals in certain North African countries. So yeah, it would appear that they've now popped up with a little vehicle there, and that's got the tails wagging and people suggesting what's next. Shares have softened a bit over recent weeks, but again,
they are profitable now, though. That's the thing. So it's I think it's at half a pence or something. I mean, to be honest, see the last couple of weeks, I've hardly looked at anything, to be honest, but I think I did have it in my monitor the other day, and it was around about half a pence, which was probably the same price as the last race. So no, it's definitely attractive. Now, there's lots of things. I mean, sticking the oil and gas as well, and I think we had them on last week. It was Advance Energy, mm-hmm. Mark. Yeah. You spoke to, I think he's Scottish, so he is, Leslie Peterkin. Certainly had no trouble raising, was it 30 million?
30 Mark, million, yeah, that's right.
$30 million. So, yeah, I was fortunate enough to get in that placing, so I'm pretty excited.
Again, putting big money in themselves as well. Yeah, I mean, they committed. Was it £1 million or something like that? I don't know what they ended up putting in, but they talked about that very early on. Yeah, that they were going to put in £500,000 as the shell and then go and follow the money with £1 million. And, you know, again, big positive connotations there, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what attracted to me Advance in the first place, obviously, because they'd put, as you see, I think they had $450,000 the directors had put in the last 12 months, which is always a big tick in the box. And you look at the history of these guys, and they don't do... 50 barrels of oil a day deals. You know, they're talking about 20,000 barrels a day, you know, by the middle of the decade. That's a target. So, yeah, it'd be good to see that getting back in the market. And, it's back in the market now. Sorry, it came back last week, but it'd be good to get the deal tied up and see what the roadmap's like. But, yeah, no, there's another good opportunity in oil and gas. And, you know, clearly the connection, the director's, I've no issue raising money with a connection. So, no, there's loads of opportunities here, but it's just time. It's just getting time. I mean, you can see
right on. Energy, I don't know if you've looked at that, but the guys from Tullow have gone in there. Company's been rumoured to be doing something interesting for a long time. It's got loads of cash, but it's never really had much in there. It's like a rudderless ship, and now the Tullow guys have gone in, and I think there's a good opportunity in Stirling. At the current levels, again, if you want some small cap, there's Longboat Energy. We know Kistos PLC have kind of come to the market as a shell vehicle with loads of interest, and they're looking at getting out and doing a deal. Again, very, very deep support for Andrew Austin there. Longboat with a board that were behind Faro Petroleum. I think they've got about a 7 million market cap or 8 million market cap and about £6 million in cash. So, you know, the Faro Petroleum was £1 billion company or sold for $1 billion, started as a nothing. You know, it was one of the darlings of AIM 5-6 years ago. So all the right people, plenty of cash, tiny valuation. Yeah. I think there's interest. I think oil's going to be interesting 2021. Yeah.
So, it's just getting the time, isn't it? I mean, you can say, right, I'm going to focus for a couple of weeks and, you know, what's currently going on in the markets. But then, you know, from my perspective, you know, maybe, you know, certain elements of stock box suffers or whatever. So it's just trying to get that balance. But the moment we're all stock boxed out, Mark, aren't we? And we're just trying to push forward with that. And obviously keep the market musings going in the background as well. Because last year we were doing maybe 3 or 4 a week, but this year we seem to have, it's maybe one a week or maybe two maximum. So
it's not as many, but yeah, there's plenty of other content we're creating. So we are, you know, as you say, very busy doing lots of different things. But the market musings is something that people generally like to listen to. So yeah, we need to be making sure we're keeping getting regular people on, really.
Yeah, we've done that one with Jonathan Rowland.
Jonathan Rowland week. From Mode, yeah, very yeah, interesting.
That was interesting. Yeah. He was an interesting character. So there's lots of people out there, I mean, that we could go and get, but it's just getting time to do it.
But we've started talking to some people, haven't we, in the US, haven't we, and also in Australia recently, sort of companies listed on the TSX and the ASX, which is something a bit new for us. I know we spoke before we came on about sort of trading in these different markets and how maybe difficult it is, but it's not something that I do. I think I have, in the past I did buy something on the ASX. I've never owned any TSX companies though, but there's definitely a lot of opportunities in those markets, I think. If your broker allows you to trade in them,
well, that's the conversations I'm kind of having at the moment with a couple of my brokers. I've actually done a couple of placings in Canada, and it's I've got the paperwork. It's just a nightmare. I think Doc, you've had a nightmare as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Computershare Canada can't communicate directly with UK registrars, even though there's Computershare in the UK. I mean, I've said it. At Christmas when we spoke, I wouldn't buy another. I wouldn't take any more shares in Canada. That deal this way, because of that experience. It's all well and good buying something that's gone up 4x in Australia or Canada, but if you can't buy and sell those shares, and you're having to fuck around with share certificates, it's not just a pain in the ass. It's emotionally taxing and it's frustrating. And you know, you can sort of find yourself in a situation where you look at the thing saying, I was 400% up there. Now I'm in a position I can only sell them at 100%. And again, you know, we can say it's not to be sniffed at. But when you've taken the risk and you've gone to the trouble of buying these things and holding them to see that move, and then to be not able to crystallize it, hugely frustrating. And I think
the paperwork to fill out for a placing for Canada as well is just absolutely ridiculous as well. It's, some of these things I've printed them off and I'm like, it's like 40 pages. In reality, you only need to fill out 10, but it's trying to work out what you actually need to fill out and, you know, what part of the world you're from, because there's different tick boxes and, it's just, I don't know, maybe they need to revamp their system as well, because it's a bit soul-destroying, so it's trying to suss it out, how to get it right. But
risk you guys have got is that, you know, you start venturing off into Australia and to Canada, and suddenly, you know, you're able to provide a wider market with lots of information. But does that attract? I mean, how do you service your audience or your listeners? Is it a case of we do an interview with a TSX company? And we have an Australian sort of audience, and then we go and do one with a UK company, we have a UK audience, or is there a crossover? And I think there's value. Don't get me wrong. I think there is an immense amount of value to what you're actually going out and you're doing. But it's how much of that value do people get, and where's your core audience? Because, you know, like, it's clear to me that because of how busy you are right now, there's not like this sort of rolling off of different companies of, you know, because you're not able to follow it. So are the people that tune in just for that, or is it you want the interview with the company? And again, I guess it's just like open dialogue. And it's one of the things I struggle with, Mark, when, you know, you ask me, are you going to carry on with your podcast? And one of the things I found is I wanted to talk about market mechanics and how you can make money in a market. But the actual audience was saying, look, yeah, we don't want to listen to 5-10 minutes of you chatting crap about how to do it. We just want to know where the opportunities lie. And it really used to frustrate me, because I think there's a lot of opportunity to actually going out and giving some reason and rational explanation to how can people find those opportunities that Kenny can look for with the small caps or the shells. And did you get where I'm coming from? And it's a real hole in the boat.
I think, from our perspective, is we're just building a network just now, and at some point there will be a broker that comes along, and whether it's, you know, it's one in the US that people need to sign up for, there'll be some brokerage firm that will allow seamless trading in TSX and ASX, and there's no point in waiting for that to happen and then try and build up your network. So that's why we are reaching out, and to be honest, they're coming to us as well. So it's not just reaching out, we're getting DMs all the time.
And they then facilitate it through their network, don't they, as well? So yeah. Even if we're not hitting directly those markets from our audience, because it is mostly in the UK, the companies that we're interviewing, they have their channels and their mailing list, for example, that they put out. It's still good content for them, but it would be good to be hitting more of a global sort of audience in that respect. But I think it's a good point you make there, Kenny. That it's probably got to happen one day because as you say,
The world's got to open up. Yeah, so it has. It should be in this day and age. So so listen, I'd talk to the devil, Doc. You know me. I'll talk to anyone. It doesn't bother me at all. So.
Sounds like you're going in the right. Look, you've got a plan. You're going. You know, you're taking your company forward in the direction that you think, you know, is going to be. There's no good trying to follow a trend in this sort of media space. You've got to set the trend and you've got to set the tone and the direction because you know it's littered with these people that are just sort of interviewing crappy companies. You know, sort of giving it the old swan song and. This market is full of dinosaurs in the PR space, and I just think you know their day has been and gone and Reddit. We talked about this the last time we were speaking. The likes of what happened in the US with GameStop, and again, it's not. There's lots of problems with what happened with that, but at the same time, it sort of showed that new era and that sort of trend that's being set and the pace that's being set by these types of punters is key to the future. And communicating in that area and towards that sector, as long as you've got good quality content, which you guys generally do have, then I think it's definitely the way to go. And there'll be a lot of, I'm sure you'll meet people who show, a little bit of negative sort of attitude towards it or a little bit of resistance. But, you know, keep pushing in that direction. I'm sure you're going to have a huge amount of success with it.
Yeah, we'll have some fun anyway. Put it that way, Doc. I like Tom. I mean, we talked to a guy last week and we never actually realised who he was until halfway through the conversation. Mark, you remember last week? So have you ever watched the Yukon Gold TV, Doc?
I've seen some of those documentaries,
So we were talking to a guy and I'm looking at his bio and I went, God, that's the guy from the television. And to be fair to him, I think it's Bernie Krefts, his name, and he never mentioned it in the slightest. You know, he wasn't boastful about it or nothing. It was just another guy, and hopefully in the coming weeks we might be able to get him on Market Musings because I think that would be quite an interesting story. I think he said he had 70 projects that he was managing currently, which is just crazy. 70 different prospects, so. Yeah, he was an interesting guy, very knowledgeable, and obviously he's got the TV angle as well. So, again, that was just a DM on Twitter, so it was. So, yeah, might as well. You never know what happens when you talk to somebody, Doc. It always leads to something else, and then there's maybe an investment opportunity or something. So it's you've got to have these conversations because one day one of these conversations will... You know, get you an investment opportunity that might make you a killing. So,
I agree. Yeah, I mean, so I would say that whilst I've probably wasted a year of my life on some of these kind of conversations with people, or it felt like that. So, rather, let me reiterate: it felt like I'd wasted a collective year of my life. You know, 10% of my career chatting to people and it going nowhere. As things started to grow and unfold and start, I mean, those relationships have become quite important. Mm-hmm. Those opportunities from those relationships have become quite important, both from a monetary and educational perspective. So, you know, I went out to Cyprus, went and looked at a project, as you know, at Chesterfield, because a friend of mine was invested. I had no money in the company. I met with the geologist. We went around for a couple of days. You know, we walked the ground. I got to know more about that project, come away absolutely buzzed up. My enthusiasm perhaps clouded some of the decision making that should have been a little bit more patient or perhaps should have got to know certain things a little bit better at that point in time, and I didn't. And of course, I was a bit early to the party. I went back, reviewed the assets again. I watched them on site doing the drilling operations. And I've seen that sort of company grow. And whilst it's been frustrating because I've had to have this experience to get to where we are today and I've grown the knowledge, it's becoming imperative moving forward. So, you know, Chesterfield has now got a FTSE 100 partner. The shares are very, very sort of cheap at the moment, or they look cheap, and they've got an active drilling project taking place. As soon as I can get to Cyprus, I'll go up, I'll go and see the guys again. But I'm actually, you know, not so much, whilst it comes across like I'm focusing on Chesterfield and Cyprus, I'm actually focusing on the cycle of where people invest, why people invest, what does a company have to do in order to trigger that sort of interest, and, you know, operationally, where is the value? And all of that collectively, it becomes priceless information. It becomes priceless. You know, these are priceless lessons. And they are born out of the conversations that you're referring to, Kenny.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. But there we go. Well, believe it or not, that's an hour we've been talking already, which is just crazy. It just seems like we started chatting 10 minutes ago. So, Mark, I think we can call it there.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Doc, for coming on this bank holiday weekend and having a chat to us. And I hope it won't be the last time that we speak. I'm sure it won't be.
Well, Mark, you know, Kenny, just want to take the opportunity again to thank you for inviting me on. Also, perhaps there's been quite a number of people contact me and say, I didn't realise you were taking a break from social media, you were going away, you're retiring, whatever it might be. And, you know, perhaps I assume maybe that's just a little bit of ego creeping in that people are looking, but there's clearly been a lot of people that didn't catch that. So to those of you that have interacted with me over the years, I'm super grateful. And we don't always get along or see eye to eye, but nonetheless, it's been a great experience, and I'm thankful and hopeful that, you know, that interaction may well sort of, you know, happen again in the future, maybe in under a different light slightly. But yeah, appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on and talk to you and your audience as well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think you've actually only sworn once. I've probably sworn more than which is quite
again
unusual.
I'm trying to retrain my myself, so when they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, I'm actually doing my best to be the new dog that can learn a couple of new tricks. So a guy, I think as I made a comment the other day, which was, you know, a little bit of foul language, and somebody said to me, well, you know, it's because you're uneducated and you don't have a great use of the English language. And, you know, to which I responded, well, you know, my grandmother used to say the same thing, but I would sometimes lick my knife, or I'd drop in a little F-bomb for no other reason than just to sort of wind her up. That's the kind of nature of certain characters. So, you know, sometimes it's nice just to sort of throw out a couple of expletives, and all the better when people just think it's a representation of your sophistication or education. Guess what I'm saying is, it's nice to just twist people's tits a little bit now and again, just to get them going, you know.
Oh yeah, perfect. Right, we'll let you go, Doc, and enjoy the rest of the bank holiday. Hopefully it's as sunny where you are as it is in Scotland. And Mark, I know it's snowing there, so just enjoy.
Actually,
it.
it's getting slightly better. It might be an okay afternoon. We'll see.
All right.
I'll get out. But yeah, thank you very much, Doc. Good to talk to you again.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.